Wait, are you gaming? On a Chromebook?
Yep. It's got a high-res 120Hz display, plus this killer RGB keyboard. And I can access thousands of games anytime, anywhere.
Stop playing.
What?
Get out of here.
Huh?
Yeah, I want you to stop playing and get out of here so I can game on that Chromebook.
Got it.
Go ahead, break it down real low. Discover the ultimate cloud gaming machine, a new kind of Chromebook.
Football is back, and we have you covered each weekday afternoon on OutKick's Hot Mic with Hutton and Withrow.
Some of the best football guests, from Armando Salguero and John McClain to Trey Wallace and Bobby Carpenter, plus the top headlines and reaction to the college football and NFL weekends.
The Chiefs go for dynasty mode with Patrick Mahomes, Travis Kelce, and Andy Reid.
They're the favorite, right?
Yeah, they have to be. The AFC goes through Arrowhead, but the Bengals and Jets, they're all in to reach Vegas. And the Bills and Dolphins are also confident. Withrow, what about college football?
Can you say three-peat? That's what they're hoping to say in Athens, Georgia, as the Bulldogs continue their march to college football dominance, while a cast of usual characters led by Michigan, Ohio State, and Bama nip at their heels.
There's plenty of craziness on a week-to-week basis. Pull up to the bar with us each weekday afternoon. We're streaming live 3 to 6 p.m. Eastern across the OutKick Network. Podcasts available everywhere, and always check out OutKick.com.
NFL and college football covering your favorite teams. OutKick's Hot Mic with Hutton and Withrow.
Welcome, everyone, to a bonus episode of There Will Be Dungeons. We do these for you, those who have supported us as Dungeons Plus members over at therewillbedungeons.com. If you're hearing this and you aren't one of those people, that means you're getting it a week late, and that's a bummer because we'd rather hear it early plus get all the other benefits. So if you're getting this late, go check it out, therewillbedungeons.com for details. What we usually do around here is ask a bunch of questions. They come into us via the website, so go on over there to the same website and send us those questions. You can also use the Discord, you can use Twitter, all kinds of places they get pulled from. And Kristen compiles them and then reads them here on the show and asks us questions based on what you guys want to know. So, Kristen, take it away.
All right, first question today. We know it's called There Will Be Dungeons, but where be the dungeons?
Deep in phlogiston space, there's a prison called Pentel Vice. That's
I don't think they're caught up, because I would say the entire year of 2019 consisted of one dungeon, and we were
There Will Be Dungeons was completely lived up to as a title last year, in that we stayed in that dungeon most of the year. Mm-hmm. But it may have felt to them, I mean, maybe they're not caught up, but it may have felt to them like, oh man, we've been in here so long, it's almost like it's a world unto itself. And it kind of is, but
it was, yeah.
Yeah. You know, it's not like Diablo where you enter a randomly generated cave and then get out of it. There's more to it.
The dungeon aspect of Dungeons and Dragons is very variable. You can have a campaign without any dungeons in it, and there are mega dungeons like, what's that? Was it Waterdeep? That, like, it has a whole, it's basically a whole world unto itself. That's how large the dungeon is. So you just never leave the dungeon. Like, you just live in that dungeon basically for the duration of how long you might play.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, there's all kinds of variety, but yes, there will be dungeons.
From a video game standpoint, it used to annoy me when, say, something like World of Warcraft would have an outdoor dungeon. And it doesn't annoy me now, but it used to, because I had it in my head that a dungeon was a certain kind of thing. It was either underground or in a castle or somewhere that's hard to get to, and you got to get into it. And then it's dark and dank and lots of twisty places and hallways and stuff like that. You know, this stereotype of what a dungeon is in a fantasy setting is what I was always locked into. And I think part of that's because of like wizardry. What was it called? The game back in the day where you just move one square at a time and first person thing.
That's what D&D it was at its inception.
It was, for sure.
Pulls in the ground.
And you can totally do that. Like, you can run all kinds of just single dungeon campaigns or campaigns that are full of these kinds of dungeons. It's just that once you realize that the construct can be taken to other settings, it can be underwater, it can be above ground, it can be in a place that you normally just hang out in, but now the whole place is a place where you're fighting. Like, there's no rules about what a dungeon is. These encounters happen all over the place now. So I don't know. But, you know, our show being called There Will Be Dungeons would lead the mind to go, oh, they're going to just be nothing but dungeons. But no, it's not how we do it.
promise for the future that there will be.
I will have it known, though, that Varel jumps every time we enter a dungeon.
Oh, like jumps in excitement?
No, like as the loading screen hits.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, right. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
You always jump through the portal.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Is there any other way to instance in? I don't think so.
Yeah, just like Mega Man through a boss door, you should be in the air or you're doing it wrong.
Yeah, what are you
sliding? Sliding's acceptable, too.
Is it?
I think so.
I've never really played a hardcore, like, meaningful run through any Mega Man games.
Well, that's a sad thing.
I know. I feel bad. Maybe I mean, it's not like they're not available to me in some form. I could probably pick it up and go. We'll see.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Next question. Thank you all for such a wonderful tale. I look forward to the new episode each week in my feed, and it's brought me several honest to goodness and much needed LOL moments, as well as many other feels. As for my question, if I recall correctly, at the start, Scott was doing all the sound effects and background music / noise on the fly, so to say. Is that still the case, or are you doing stuff in post? Everything blends so well. Not that it didn't sound good early on, but now it all seems scripted and planned out. But that would mean Scott knows what Bo has planned, which I don't think is the case, as then he would know what's coming. How do you keep all the different effects organized on ready to go? Thank you again for the show.
Okay, this is a great question. I'm really glad they asked it, because one of the reasons I like it is it makes me feel good about where it's at right now. So in the early days, I was like, all right, I'm going to have all these stereotypic effects ready and under, you know, music and bed stuff and all these things just ready, because who knows what Bo will say, and maybe one of these will work. And, you know, I kind of winged it. And yeah, it was okay. And you're right, it was all real time then. But none of that has changed. It's still real time. It's still done as we play. The difference now is we've done this long enough that I think I just have a better sense of where we're going based on where we were last week, what I should be set up for. Things Bo will say in real time will make me go, ooh, it'd be cool if we did this. And I will right then be ready to do what we need to do. Because I've also collected a ton of stuff since then that I use during the show. So it's still real time. It's still, none of it's pre-planned. None of it's based on any info we're getting from Bo. I just have this stuff at the ready as best I can. And it mostly works. There's times where I just don't have anything. I'll give you an example. We had a minecart thing happen today, and I would have loved to have had something on hand. I just didn't. That would have sounded like a bunch of cool minecarts flying around. Just to kind of put people's minds in that place. But outside of that, I found, you know, I didn't know we were going to be at the River Styx. We got there and I immediately went, oh, I got a bunch of great wave stuff for this, like sounds of waves and water bubbling up and other things, you know, creaking of the sounds of the sails and the parts of the boat and that sort of thing. And so I just try to have it all kind of at my fingertips in some way. And if it's coming off as well planned, then that makes me really happy to hear that, because that's the goal. I want it to feel natural and organic and not gimmicky or tacked on.
Yeah. Well,
yeah.
It
works really well, actually.
Yeah. And I also do this, probably goes without saying, because you guys don't, I mean, there's sounds you're going to hear as fellow teammates, but I don't have that audio cranked for Bo or for any of us. It's all for audience stuff. So the idea is to try not to be too annoying. Like, I don't want something in the background that's just like driving Bo crazy while he's trying to tell part of a story or whatever. So the goal is just try to be subtle and quiet and in the background and not bonk us over the head with it all the time. And I probably did more of that in the early days than I do now. So
anyway, awesome job.
There's that.
All right, next question. I know Bo can't comment on this, but with the resurfacing of fan favorite characters in the last few episodes, Tedna, Pod, Bok Bok, and others, along with Lost Items, am I the only one who feels an endgame style battle coming? With every character who can make it, standing beside our heroes, maybe fighting against Hope's Horde.
It's not scripted in that way, so I have no idea what's going to happen. And that's not just me being facetious. I literally don't know what the players are going to do. So I try not to plan too far in advance. Like, I'll plan locations and things of that nature, but I don't have an end game in mind. I have no idea what the end of the story even looks like. We're all writing the story as we go.
You're the Stephen King of D&D DMs is what you are. Because he does that too. Yeah. He has no idea how he's going to end a book. So he'll just start writing around it and eventually get there. And some could say that they notice that in a Stephen King book, that the endings aren't the best aspects of his books. But I could see why the listener would feel this crescendo, because I felt it a little bit as well. Like if suddenly George Miller showed up again, I would probably go, all right, Bo's doing something where they're getting the whole band back together. But up till now, it's just been these nice moments of, you know, finding Pod again, or at least a version of Pod was a really cool moment for me. And I love that stuff. Ted and I,
husband, Roger.
Yeah. Roger.
He shares a name with one of the clowns on the Council of Clowns.
Yeah. Probably no coincidence there. But yeah, like as much as I want to kick Ted into the curb, it's kind of cool the form he's in this timeline. Like that stuff's cool.
Yeah, he's the what if you guys died and he survived.
Right. Mm. Mm. He's a little cooler than he was.
And he doesn't have any lips.
Mm-hmm. Nope.
So does anyone hope for a big end style battle, or are there any hopes for certain story arcs?
Well, Varel as a character probably does, right, Kyle? Like that's all he'll want. But what do you think as a player?
Oh, geez. Like, who knows at this point? Because originally the goal was, like, maybe King of the Desert, or, like, I'd get all the goblins together and get them off their cars and put together a formal force. But now, I mean, Varel could become Star Fox, for all I know. Like, the way we're going with space and multi-dimensions, that's like watching the early episodes of X-Men, and then you miss 5 seasons, and all of a sudden they're, like, Cable showing up from the future, and like Storm and Wolverine are together, and who knows what happened along the way. Mm-hmm. You embrace it. Embrace the ride.
Yeah. I agree. John?
Yeah, same thing. I had a very clear idea of what Stanley wanted at the beginning of this, and all of it is out the window. So I have no idea at this point. It's just we'll see where it goes.
I know where Nash is going to end up. I'm not going to say, but no matter even what Bo does, I know where he's going. I know what's going to happen.
Oh, well, that's Ooh. News to me.
Yeah.
I honestly have ideas, but I don't trust them, because if you pre-plan something, then you're biased towards that inevitability. And I don't like feeling that. I feel like that takes away your agency and your contributions to the story. If I'm trying, I don't want to push, like I want to guide you in certain ways, but I don't want to guide you to a risk. Like it's a game. We're playing a game. I know it involves combat, and there hasn't been a lot of that lately, but we do have our big combats. It is a game. And so I'm not trying to write a screenplay or a satisfying TV series or a movie with the resolution. I'm just coming to game time with game to play. And, you know, so the story is exciting for me too, because I don't know. And I feel it's better that way. And honestly, the reason why we're in the position we're in is you got your heroes made the brave decision to all sacrifice yourselves in Caravalon. I mean, it really wasn't supposed to go that way. You were supposed to pick one to die, or find a clever way out of it altogether by perhaps getting Quizquaz into the beam or something along those lines. And that didn't happen. So the fact that we're on this galactic adventure has nothing to do with any pre-planning. When you guys decided, I needed to really rethink what we were doing, because you did this crazy thing I couldn't expect. So this whole we're in the multiverse business, I mean, Nash time stuff was already in the works. That was a thing. But, like, I didn't think we'd be here.
Yeah.
This wasn't planned. I'm just like, well, now we're in the multiverse, everyone. So that's what happens. And just like you as the players, I'm also like, oh, man, this is very interesting.
Mm-hmm. I mean, when I say I know exactly where Nash will end up, it's not what Bo's going to do. I mean, I could get killed in an encounter and then that changes it. So that would change it. But mm-hmm. if I survive, I have absolutely know how my final scene goes. At least in my head. Not if he dies, that's different. If I'm dead, that's a whole different animal. But if I live and the campaign ever ends and he's, you know, we're no longer with these characters, I know I have a plan. And it won't kill everybody else or take out the world or anything dumb like that. It'll
just kill a few.
I just have an idea, too, how that might work. And some of it I may talk to Bo about ahead of time, because we might be able to make it more dramatic, but yeah, he'll probably die though. Like he almost
sleep on himself and kills 18 lower level characters.
Perfect. Don't give me any better ideas.
That's all right, for the great DM, how do you design the bad guys to make sure that the encounter is doable and challenging at the same time? That laser that killed Squirt seems so OP. Do you check the party's HP and damage when you design an encounter?
I'm going to veto this one and say trade secrets.
Ooh. You're like a magician that won't tell a secret. Mm-hmm.
It's not that big of a secret. I think it's too large of a conversation actually to have for this particular show. But Matt Colville has some pretty good content on modifying existing, like using the monsters in the monster manual as templates rather than, I can't give the link, but search for it, using the monster as templates and picking and choosing what you want from various things and kind of putting it together. So, you know, as the DM, you're not like, oh, I can only use the monsters in the book. As the DM, I can literally do anything I can want. I can make a baby have 1,000 HP and give God itself 1 HP. It would not be a great idea, and it would probably not result in a lot of fun, but you don't have, it's not rules like other games where it's like, that's not in the rules. As the DM, you have license to literally do everything. Just don't break the trust of your players. That's pretty much it. And you do that by following the rules that affect them, but certainly you don't have to follow monster stat blocks at all. So, most of the time I feel my encounters are extremely doable and then the party finds them extremely challenging. So I'm glad from the outside it looks good. Confidence.
We are a pretty unoptimized party in some ways, but that's also the charm of it.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Scrappy do-gooders.
Yep.
I know Scott said he would not want to be a DM for D&D, but what about one of the Warhammer 40K RPGs? And have you guys thought of one of the other RPGs for a one-off between seasons?
Well, Bo's talked about Cyberpunk for a long time and, you know, at some point some kind of science fiction-based thing. But just to the 40K mention, I am completely enamored with that world, but I've never once played the tabletop game. I've never painted a figure. I've never done any of the things that you see around the periphery of that experience, but I play almost all the games that come out, even when they're bad. I just love the setting and the idea, the concept, and just everything about the vibe and tone of 40K. And in a lot of ways, our campaign mimics some of that in my head, at least tonally, and I love that. So, the answer is yes, but I don't know when that would be. Those are also really hard to do online because that game is all about a figure and a tactical board and movement rules. And, you know, like there are rules in D&D, but there's a physicality to 40K that I don't think you can ignore. And the only time I ever see that streamed are people in a big room with a big table with all the stuff. You know, Metzen does that with his when he was doing that before.
Yeah, it's the war gaming, the actual war game of it.
Right. That part of it is tricky. It's not so much a role playing game. So,
but the RPG, you probably do it without minis and stuff. Like it could be Theater of the Mind. They have RPGs for Warhammer.
Yeah. And I would probably love doing that. But then again, that's also a much more predefined world in some ways. D&D is too, in terms of the rules and the archetypes and all of that. But this campaign that we're doing is so much fun with the characterizations and we kind of went nuts with, you know, our setting. I don't know if you can do that as easily in Warhammer. So there's downsides.
Yeah, I mean, you can do that. It's mainly just work investment at that point. But you're right that if you're doing it on a specific IP, there's probably expectations from the players about how that world works.
Yeah.
So I would think we would not want to vary it if we were just doing a one-off or two-off. We want to keep it strictly by the book. So, no, it's possible. I think the challenge is just, takes time to become familiar with rule sets. So I don't know much about how that works.
Right.
You'd ideally want to have somebody who's done that work run the game for you.
Yeah. Mm.
All right. Next one. We have an episode that gives us the Nash origin story. We went to see the lizard folk kingdom and learned about Varel's people. We are digging deep into Hope's rise and fall from glory to maybe turn into a deity. Will we see or learn an origin story for Stanley? Are the elves from the latest episodes part of that storyline?
I hope so.
Maybe.
I want to know more. I want to know more about Stanley's origins.
I mean, I will say this. Bo has not been secretive about the fact that I turned in maybe too much backstory for Stanley. He has it, and only recently did he ask for the document again. So could be we're going in that direction. I mean, there have been hints in the story. It's been revealed a couple times that his name is not Stanley Billings. There's been little bits and pieces dropped here that his family died. I can't remember what else has come up, but there's been hints. I don't know how deep we're going to go. I don't know how much of that's going to be in there. But it's something that I like a lot. I like his backstory a lot, and I don't know, maybe one day I'll write it, even if we don't get into it.
I'll drop one little hint, but that doesn't mean anything about what John will do. It's entirely up to him. But there were a lot of therapists in that empathy army. That's all I'll say.
Interesting.
What?
It's all about therapy now.
Stanley needs therapy?
Stanley's traditionally a very sad character.
That boy needs therapy.
But
I love that.
There's also elves, and there's lots there for this is definitely for Stanley. We've done a lot of you know, we had Varel and Razak Bal, and we had Hope's relationship, you know, with the tieflings of Tietkala, and Nash is just a mysterious wonder kind, like whatever. But wait, Stanley been
Scott, is that like an old techno song? What the heck?
Yeah, do you remember that song?
My God.
That boy needs therapy.
What a head trip.
Yeah, I love that song. It's weird. It's some old, like, I wouldn't even call it techno. It's more like a
remix?
It reminds me of, you guys remember Art of Noise? It's it's that vein of music. It's like a lot of sampling and talking and stuff with kind of industrial music. And that game is called, or that game, that that song is it just called The Boy Needs Therapy? I can't remember. I'll track it down and
search for it.
Yeah, I'll share it with everybody. But it's just great. It's a great song. But when you hear it, you're like, wait, I've heard that before somewhere.
Well, can I Google it and find the answer? So probably or not.
The boy needs therapy. There it is.
The Avalanches.
Yes, and it's called Frontier Psychiatrist. That's it.
I've never seen this before.
That's right. Frontier Psychiatrist.
Yep. It's great. It's real great. It's just a weird, this kind of stuff is totally my jam. And I would have more of it if they would make more of it. Because I like weird, sample-y, like, you guys know the Propellerheads, Take California, that song? Take California. Anyway, same thing. It's like these old 50s, you know, like, I don't know, they're congressmen from the 50s just saying things, and they just mix it into like a techno song. It's just great. Big fan.
Well, speaking of weird slang and everything, I know Bo has changed many things in the Planescape multiverse. I just wonder what made him decide to do away with the planar cant. And there's a link here, this website that I'm sharing with you guys. It is 90s beautiful. But it's a dictionary of that cant. I always thought it would be amusing listening to Scott try and stumble over some of the phrasing.
Well, the cant is awesome. And the cant, but Planescape reminds me of cyberpunk. It's basically cyberpunk, but in a D&D fantasy setting. Essentially, you know, the slang, while very cool, is just hard to remember at the end of the day. Like, it's just, you know, we didn't go into this like, this is going to be a Planescape campaign. I'm going to rehearse all this stuff. We just kind of, I was like, where do you go when you traverse the astral sea? And, you know, I had to settle on some material externally where I'd been using mostly material that I'd been creating, because a whole pantheon is very difficult to come up with on a week's notice. And so I had every intent of using the slang, but it was just difficult. And, to remember, it was just a lot of the slang is not natural. Like, I mean, I'm flipping through it now.
Bub, Ather, fill the pitcher's empty.
Yeah, like one of the slangs is Athar at the spire, which means someone who seems to be invulnerable. So I'm not going to remember that when somebody's invulnerable to say, oh, look, he's Athar at the spire. You know, I'm just like, I just can't, you know. So, and what's good news about it is that while it would definitely help you guys feel a sense of place by speaking in the slang, it's not absolutely necessary. I still try to, I make a point of trying to remember, but as we get into the show, I lose it.
It's, we did a little. We called Nash a Burke about 100 times. So.
Yep. Yeah, I mean, Burke's the big one, and what's the chant? You know, what's the good word, basically? Those are the two big ones. Barmy is for an insane person. Mm. That's one that, and a basher, it's basically like in cyberpunk terms, you'd be like a runner or something like that. You know, you're a bunch of runners doing a job, and the Planescape version of that is you're a basher. So you're in Sigil, and you're like, you know, you get signed up for a job, and then you hit the outland or the outer planes to do basher's work, which is kind of what Hope is doing in a way.
Mm.
But she's risen to the top with her newly found hand.
Top of the bashers.
Oh, yeah. Oh, and there's one called the Bow Nasty, which is a slovenly fop, one finely dressed but dirty. So kind of like Stanley when he's dirty. He's a Bow Nasty.
Oh. Yeah, that's pretty accurate.
With the vast majority of the world being a desert, and this has to do with Hack Loman, where has Hack Loman been to have the Underdark as his favored terrain? I didn't know the world of the Wastes even had an Underdark.
Well,
I know this was kind of discussed in the Discord, but it's still a cool question.
Yeah, I don't remember where we landed on all of that. When I made him, I just kind of picked stuff I thought was cool sounding. But Hack doesn't. I don't have a good lore reason for Hack to have spent any time in the Underdark. So maybe I should make that or worry about that. But
I think in the episode we just were like, well, he's good in dark confined
kind of
spaces, and
it's more of a
stupid bandit
time. Yeah, kind of like he's just I was leaning into the mechanic of it and wanting that more than I cared about him being in there, but I don't know, sometimes it's fun to reverse engineer lore for characters a little bit.
Yeah.
And sometimes when you just make a comment about a thing or you hear somebody say something, you're like, oh, I could make a whole thing about that. Like, that's part of the fun. So I don't like having too much of that stuff in stone anyway. It's more fun to flesh it out over time.
Yeah. And then does Hack Loman have any tattoos?
He does, actually. It's funny. He's got one right in the center of his back. It is a eagle, but not the way you'd see it on a flag or something with its wings open. It's a diving eagle. So its wings tight to its body, just in a very kind of missile-looking, going straight down eagle, and heading towards some kind of prey, like a rat or something, and that's it. That's his tat.
No regerts.
Yeah, no. No regerts. That's something he would do. He's kind of a yokel.
Another new slang that I quite like, just to jump in, stretch him to the rakers, means to put maximum effort, to Deadpool it, basically.
Oh, wow.
I'm going to stretch him to the rakers.
Rakers, like raking leaves, rakers, that kind of spelling?
Rakers is short, apparently, for keel rakers.
Oh, okay.
Which is comes from a Sithrani airship's captain command to go full sail. Oh. See what I mean? This is like not intuitive slang. I'm like, what's Sithrani, and why is it important in the context of an airship captain? You know, like stuff like that is like, you know, it's just like takes time to steep in it, and I'm not there to like remember, stretch them to the rakers.
Sorry, all right, then last question. Oh, those are great. Have any of you considered live streaming yourselves role-playing your characters playing a video game? Examples could include referencing Corhear, John playing as Stanley playing Love Esquire, or Scott playing as Nash while finishing Resident Evil 2, or even Kyle role-playing as Varel playing Heroes.
I mean, look, the Kyle one I would pay to see. I'm going to go sub your channel the minute you do it, Kyle, so get on it.
Perfect. What would that even look like?
I don't think I could do it.
I think it looks like Kyle, but with a little more aggression.
Yeah, maybe.
There we go.
You'll have to do quick match, though. I don't think that strategy is going to work.
And right? Probably a lot of chat. There would probably be a lot of like, this makes no sense. Why would he go to this lane?
Yeah, that's a good point. I don't think I could do it. But sometimes, like I'm playing through, as part of some core homework, I'm playing through Yakuza 0. And It's fun to settle in on a voice for what I think those characters sound like when they're not talking, because they don't, the whole thing's in Japanese. There's no English. It's all English subtitles. And so anytime there is spoken dialogue, it's all Japanese with subtitles. And then there's plenty of times where they're not saying anything. It's just words under them and you're clicking through them kind of Animal Crossing style. And so I just have come up with what I think these people sound like, and that's, and then it'll stick. And for the whole game, that'll be those people. So that I'll do. I do that now. Just because it's more fun to have, when you have a ton of text to worry about in a game, it's way more fun than just reading it. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, but I'm never going to play through a game as Nash. I would just be, I'd feel so much pressure. I couldn't do it.
Well, even if we only do chapter one, I think there's a world where Baldur's Gate 3 comes out. We make our characters in there.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I don't know, Bo makes us throw away items every once in a while.
Yeah, it seems to be a favorite thing of mine.
Yeah. He does like to do that.
It's not intentional, but now that I look back, I go, yep,
Yeah, no kidding. Well, those questions, as always, amazing. You guys are amazing. Please keep those coming. Email us. Send them over Twitter. You can send them over the Discord. Discord, you can just hop into. Just go over to therewillbedungeons.com for more information on all of this. And send us more of your questions. We love them. We do them every month. So check us out next month, about a month from now. Until then, everybody have a fantastic week. And we'll see you on our next regular episode next week. We'll see you then.